everyone. Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
And Peter, much like a magnetic field prism that is scrambling DNA in plants and animals and humans, it's kind of all gone wrong today so far, but we're going to... Yeah, we're going to make it better. We're going to make it better for everyone. And not just for us, but for the world. And
yeah, I think, optimism.
Yeah. And we picked the perfect film to talk about optimism. It's called Annihilation.
Exactly.
Anyway, End Credits is a local movie show from local movie fans. And you can listen to us here every Thursday at 10 a.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new science fiction film Annihilation. Now, that is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we usually talk about movie news and other stuff that is going on. But this week we're going to talk about Oscar predictions, because that is kind of the big thing going on this week. It's the 90th annual Academy Awards in Hollywood, California, hosted by one James Kimmel. I don't think he goes by James, but it sounds...
James Kimmel sounds good.
It does sound a bit regal. It does sound apropos for the ostentation.
Yeah, for the Oscars. Better than Jimmy. Jimmy just doesn't feel right.
Hey, Jimmy, how's the Oscar? Okay, we're kind of wasting time mocking Jimmy Kimmel, who's done good work on the political side of things lately. So
he's based that around making fun of other people. So I think we're allowed to make fun of him a teeny tiny bit.
You might be right. Let's stop making fun of Jimmy Kimmel, though, because we only have so many times to talk about Oscar predictions, and that's why we wanted to kick off the show with today. So we took what I guess people would call the big six, so best director, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, best actor, best actress, and best picture. And so we're going to talk about who we think will win, but then who should win, because I think sometimes those things are very different when we're talking about the Oscars. You know, there's a very familiar pattern with the Oscars, and sometimes, if you recall the great Shakespeare in Love debacle of 98, or the great Forrest Gump debacle of 94, that sometimes the best picture that wins is not the best picture.
Well, I think Forrest Gump won it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that was deserved. It was between that, Shawshank Redemption and Pulp Fiction?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think Forrest Gump's the best of the three. I love all three, but I think Forrest Gump's the best all around.
That might be a debate we save for another time. Anyway, let's start with Best Director. Now, the nominees are... There's no fanfare. Christopher Nolan, Jordan Peele, Greta Gerwig, Paul Thomas Anderson, and Guillermo del Toro. So, Peter, who do you think should win, and who do you think will win?
For this one, I think it's both. I think Jordan Peele is the one who deserves to win, and I think Jordan Peele will win for this.
Really?
I think if Get Out's going to get... just a singular major award, it'll be that one for Jordan Peele. Because it's just all around a great film, and, you know, done by him. Like, Daniel Kaluuya, you know, did a phenomenal job, but there was other great actors this year, whereas Get Out, just all around, it was funny, it was scary, the visuals were remarkable, it dealt with a lot of major issues that, especially now, you know, because of Trump, are even more needed to be talked about. Yeah, so I think Get Out will win Best Picture for that. It also didn't win anything at the Golden Globes, right? I don't even think... Did it
Get
even,
Out?
Yeah, Get Out.
Well, Get Out was... I think it was nominated in comedy musical.
Yes,
that's
it
why
was. And that, I remember Jordan Peele was not happy with that.
Nobody was happy about that. It's like... I understand why Jordan Peele wasn't happy with his movie, but I mean, it was one of those weird things that the... And I think we talked about this when the Golden Globe nominations were announced. It's one of those weird things, not you and me, but whoever was on the show that week, that it's one of those weird things that the Golden Globes does so that they can pack in as many stars as possible, because that's kind of what the Golden Globes are about. I also chose Jordan Peele as a should win. I am not, however, as convinced that he will win. I think Guillermo del Toro is going to win. And I think it's kind of... I mean, the kind of wild card in this is Greta Gerwig, but you don't hear a lot of people talking about Lady Bird, and hasn't been kind of like an awards kind of darling. It's been a critical darling, certainly, but not in the award circles.
Talked about as much as the others.
Yeah, and so that leaves Paul Thomas Anderson. I don't think this is his year, and certainly not for Phantom Thread. And Christopher Nolan, I don't think that's his year either. He's doing okay with the Oscar, but so I mean that brings it down to Peele and Del Toro, and I think that in between the two, with Martin McDonagh out, not in this race as for Three Billboards, I think that sort of elevates Del Toro as sort of the, I guess, the torchbearer for like old fashioned Hollywood kind of. And even though we did talk in the Shape of Water review, Tim and I, about how all the things that made Shape of Water different, there's still an old fashioned cinema quality to it that all the olds who are still on the Academy will find appealing. I think, and not that Guillermo del Toro, I don't think, isn't deserving, but I think this is his year.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Best Supporting Actress, the nominees are Mary J. Blige, Allison Janney, Leslie Mayville, Laurie Metcalf, and Octavia Spencer. I think because she has been sweeping up the awards, Allison Janney will win. I am not sure she's deserving because, you know, you can go back and listen to our I, Tonya review where I wasn't completely enamored with her performance. I this is kind of like the weakest category for me because I haven't seen some of the picks, but I think just for like sheer body of work and her general awesomeness, I would love to see Laurie Metcalf win.
Laurie Metcalf, that's exactly what I was thinking for Lady Bird. I love her. I love her in other films. And she played the perfect exact type of mom that she needed to play.
Yeah.
And just did a remarkable role of it. A great mom, scary mom, just all around the mom that Lady Bird needed.
Yeah, and she's such a great actress, and there was a great profile of her in the New York Times too about how she's like not very, like she's not one of a flashy actress at all. She's got a very great work ethic, and she's kind of always there.
Mm-hmm.
And
but you don't notice her all the time.
That's
whereas
right.
In this one, she was pretty up in the front,
right? And I think that was my problem with I, Tonya and Allison Janney is like, it was a very in your face performance. It was a very like, this mom is bad. You can see why Tanya Harding wasn't a gold medalist, because it all started with her mom just being an absolute horror show. And that seems a little, I'm not sure if that Tanya Harding's mom was really like that, but that seemed a little simplistic.
A little too,
Yeah. Anyway, let's go with Best Supporting Actor next. So the nominees are Willem Dafoe, Woody Harrelson, Richard Jenkins, Christopher Plummer, and Sam Rockwell.
I think by far Woody Harrelson deserves the win for this one. I loved the film, and his character isn't even, you know, that central of a character, but definitely just the best character. Just such an interesting person. Like, so much happens with him that you don't expect, and he's just such a nice guy, but there's just so many questions about him. And and Woody Harrelson's always great, but he did a remarkable job with this. He fully went in depth with the character, and I forgot it was Woody Harrelson for a sec, you know?
Mm-hmm. Did you have him down as would win or should win?
Should win.
Okay. Who do you think will win?
I think Woody Harrelson, actually. Okay. Either Woody Harrelson or Sam Rockwell.
Right.
I think they both did such a remarkable job on Three Billboards and played such specific, very, very interesting characters that they'll probably win.
Yeah, I would agree, except I think Sam Rockwell is going to win, and I think it's...
Yeah.
I agree with you about Harrelson, and he has the more difficult part where you can sort of feel his...
Mm-hmm.
Empathy for the Frances McDormand's character and her struggle and where she's coming from. At the same time, you kind of feel how he's kind of trapped, because this is kind of one of those cases where, you know, you can't solve a case unless you have, like, the things you need to solve a case. And we kind of see that happening in Toronto right now, where, you know, people are very critical of the police for not catching on to Bruce MacArthur, but... when you're talking about a community where, you know, kind of, you know, people are dubious about the police, and where the pinpoints aren't exactly explicitly connected, it can be hard for the police to overcome the deficiencies of the case in order to solve it. And you feel that with Woody Harrelson's character. Plus, there's his own private struggles and his own family relationship. It's a stark contrast to, you know, I think Rockwell will win, and I think it's by and large because of the Allison Janney factor too, where it's the more flashier part where they get to, you know,
well, he's in it longer.
That's,
and he
yeah.
is a bit more central, yeah.
Right. But it's you know, Sam Rockwell gets to revel in that character. Dixon, I believe his name is, his, you know, kind of racism and his, I'll call it ignorance.
Yeah, he represents a lot of issues that the world's dealing with right now.
Right, and it's, I mean, it's not a good performance. It's not that it's not a good performance. It's that it's the flashier part.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Harrelson, you know, it's...
More subtle.
More subtle, and... Here's Woody Harrelson too, and we'll talk about this in a second, but you know, he's had a really great year.
Oh yeah.
He did The War of the Planet of the Apes, and he did LBJ, which didn't end up getting a lot of love, and I'm not sure it's available on video yet because I'd love to check it out. But so it was like a really good year for him. So it'd be really nice to you know, he's another sort of journeyman actor who's kind of always there, and
all the way back to Cheers. probably since before that.
Yeah, but Cheers, of course, brought him to the forefront. And it is kind of amazing how...
In The Kingpin, he started as like a comedy guy, right?
Right.
And he, you know, he's moving towards more serious films and
White
obviously
Men
got
Trump.
An Oscar nomination.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's...
He's been doing that for a while, but he's...
Right.
He's at his peak right now, I'd say. Or at least, like, he's, you know, he's just doing well and he'll continue doing well.
Yeah, he's... I'm not sure that's unfair. Or that's not, you know, I think you might be right. He might be hitting his peak. And it is hard. Yeah, it is hard to believe that, you know, the Woody from Cheers is like this, is like Oscar caliber actor. But there you go. no offense to Cheers or anybody involved at Cheers. It's a good show.
Oh, I love Cheers.
Yeah. Great. No, I love Cheers too.
Yeah.
I'm glad the youngs are watching.
Yeah, we can do a podcast about Cheers.
I can see it now. Do like one episode of Cheers every week. Oh my god! Well, people are doing that.
Probably.
We should do some research. Do some market research. Mm-hmm. If anyone's got the Cheers market yet, I feel like we could win. Anyway, back to the Oscars. So the Best Actress race is Sally Hawkins, Frances McDormand, Margot Robbie, Saoirse Ronan, and Meryl Streep. I think. Frances McDormand has a lock. She's been sweeping up the awards so far, but I am holding out hope for Sally Hawkins.
Oh yeah, for Sally Hawkins?
Yeah.
I really like her. I think Frances McDormand will win. Mm-hmm. I know Sherry won the Golden Globe, but I think she'll win this too. And like with Jordan Peele, I think she's the one that deserves it. Definitely not Meryl Streep. The Post. we're the ones who reviewed it. I liked The Post, but I find very forgettable. I have to listen to our podcast to remind myself about certain parts of the film.
I don't think you're wrong. And I think it was a very Streepy performance in terms of, like, you know, she can do it in her sleep, but she did a good job. But, you know, there's kind of no difference to the way she played Cat Graham versus the way she played Julia Child or Florence Foster Jenkins. It's, you know, she just kind of fills the room with her Streepness. And I think we mentioned this when we talked about the Oscar nominations on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's a pro forma nomination. It's just like Meryl Streep was in a movie this year.
She deserves one.
Done. That's one slot. Now we got to fill the other four. You know, and it is interesting. I don't think any of the, other than Meryl Streep, I think this is a very solid kind of four-way race. But I think when you have Saoirse Ronan, who is like kind of becoming the Kate Winslet of the Oscars now, where she's going to be nominated 7 or 8 times, where they're finally like, oh, just give her one. And then you have Margot Robbie, who's been around for, I think, 4 or 5 years, so she'll definitely be back. Not that anyone's not going to be back, but I think Frances McDormand has her Oscar, of course, but Sally Hawkins, in Shape of Water, where, you know, she's required to do so much. You know, there's singing and dancing, even though her character is mute. There's one scene where there's singing and dancing. She has to communicate as a mute person. She has to make you believe that she can fall in love with a fish man and make you believe you can fall in love with a fish man.
I love Sally Hawkins.
No, and she's great, and it's such a it's such a down-to-earth role, but it's such an inspiring role as well. And then between that and you're someone else, between that and Maudie last year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I was thinking. Honestly, I'd probably pick her if I'd seen The Shape of Water. That's the one I haven't seen yet.
Okay, fair enough.
I love her. But Frances McDormand, she's just so great in it.
She is great in it. She's absolutely great.
But she's won before. Sally Hawkins won. Has she ever won an Academy?
I think she's been nominated before.
Yeah,
she was nominated for Happy Go Lucky.
Okay.
Frances McDormand won for Fargo.
Okay. Well, that was way back. I don't even think, did she even get nominated for Burn After Reading? If not,
no.
Then okay. Well, then
I don't think anyone got nominated. And I love Burn After
me
Reading.
Me too. Yeah. Okay. Well, then no. I'm going to stick with Frances McDormand.
Okay. I think Frances McDormand will win. Mm-hmm. I would love it if Sally Hawkins won too.
Mm-hmm. I hope she's a little bit. Well, no, they're not allowed to drink this time, are they? Because of the Golden Globe, she was pretty drunk when she went on stage. But like the happy, cheery kind of drunk.
There's no table service at the Oscars.
Yeah, there's
no.
Oh,
okay, that brings us to the Best Actor race. We have Timothy Chalamet, Daniel Day-Lewis, Daniel Kaluuya, Gary Oldman, and Denzel Washington. Would win and should win.
Daniel Day-Lewis, 100%. Mm-hmm. And he probably, he better not be in another film because he said he's not going to be, right? And that might be the only reason they'd give him the award. So
thanks for coming by.
Yeah. So if he does that again, I wouldn't be happy with that. But no, he does remarkable jobs, and it is apparently his last film. So I could see why he'd deserve that. And he did a great, a character acting role, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to win it.
Who should win?
I think it's Daniel Kaluuya. I'd say mm-hmm. Daniel Kaluuya should win. Daniel Kaluuya or Timothy Chalamet. Although Timothy Chalamet was not nominated for, I believe it was Call Me By Your Name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually preferred his role in Lady Bird. Mm-hmm. So if he was nominated for Best Supporting Actor in Lady Bird, I think he should win. But no, for Best Actor, Daniel Kaluuya by far.
Yeah, he's my should win. Mm-hmm. He carries that movie, and it's not just like his own character work. He's like a substitute for an entire race, an entire mm-hmm. culture, but he has to also make that deeply personal, and he does. And yeah, it's just such a great performance. I think the will win though is Gary Oldman, and I think this is going to be the
for the Churchill film.
Yeah, for Darkest Hour, and I think that's the career Oscar for him because I feel. He's only been nominated once before.
Really?
Which is like a war crime level crime. But I was watching Dark Knight the other day. It's like, why didn't you get a Best Supporting for playing Commissioner Gordon? He has deserved it for a while. This is like one of the chances for Academy payback, and I think they're going to take it. And of course, he's playing a historical figure, which is Academy catnip. He's playing
biopic.
Churchill, which is like a double point score because Churchill is such a renowned figure. So, it's a transformative performance because Gary Oldman looks nothing like Winston Churchill circa 1940. It's like tailor made. It's like, we're going to make you an Oscar suit, Gary Oldman. And it did the job. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Darkest Hour clearly worked. And I think we're going to have to say Academy Award winner Gary Oldman from now on.
We'll find out.
Which is, yeah. I mean, it's well-deserved. And no matter how much... I haven't seen The Darkest Hour, but, I'm not sure that matters at this point. Because I think that's... It was kind of the point of it was the intention that this was going to be his Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Movie. So kind of like Leonardo DiCaprio, where it's about time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And Kate Winslet for, The Reader. Mm-hmm. Was it The Reading or The Reader? It was The Reader. Anyway, that brings us to the Best Picture, which there's 9 nominees this year. Call Me By Your Name, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, The Post, The Shape of Water, and 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. This was a tough one, because I think three Billboards will win because, it was shut out of director, and I think...
Which is nonsense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's got to keep it to 5, right?
Yeah.
But it's... So somebody's... There's always going to be a loser, right? But, So I considering it's also won like the BAFTA and the Golden Globe and things. So, but I will say Get Out should win.
I'd say Get Out should win too. I think it should win. Mm-hmm. Other than Get Out, I'd be totally happy, like you said, if Three Billboards won.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. But yeah.
Well,
because Get Out represents the director, the actor, everything in it. So if it's going to win a singular award, it's definitely, you know, it'll be Best Picture.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, think it should be Best Director if it's going to get one. But
yeah, I think Peele, because I mean that was his story, his idea, his mm-hmm. drive. And it's such a transformative thing too, because everyone knows, you know, Key and Peele and.
Yeah.
And that duo and Angry Obama and all that. And this was like such a change on a dime.
Mm-hmm. His first time, right?
His first time directing.
Got almost perfection.
Yeah. And to be able to address a cultural moment like that, as well as have a really great story, great performances. And then on top of all that, to become, I think, a cultural milestone, to become like part of the culture. Because I think when I look down this list, you know, they're great movies, but will we still be talking about Call Me By Your Name in a couple of years, or Three Billboards in a couple of years?
No.
Or Phantom Thread? I mean, it's going to be, like, Phantom Thread is going to be a trivia question. And, you know, what was Daniel Day-Lewis's last movie? Like you said, if he sticks to the retirement.
Yeah, it'll be in, you know, Trivial Pursuit and things like that. But I think Get Out will be the only one who's, you know, extensively talked about for the foreseeable future.
People will still, in 10 years, when you say The Sunken Place, people still know
it. Yeah, it's going to be shown in, like, film history classes and things like that.
Film is shown in, like, history classes, yeah. I think. Like, when we're talking about civil rights and talking about, like, the 21st century and the Trump era, I think that's going to be like source material. One of the things I will add too is I don't want to discount Shape of Water too. I do think you know, if you made me choose, I would choose Three Billboards, but I would not be surprised if Shape of Water won too, just because
for Best Picture.
Yeah, because they do like to do director Best Picture mm-hmm. combos. Mm-hmm. It's been known to happen. Although last year it was Damien Chazelle and then Moonlight.
Mm-hmm.
So that was different. But
and Moonlight, I think Samuel Jackson was the one who made a comment about how it was a very stereotypical, I don't know if it was a biopic, but the type of film they make, like, purposely to get an Academy Award.
Right.
So there was, you know, some people who made that comment after. So because of that, they might purposely not make Gary Oldman win the Winston Churchill one. Just so they know people are starting to get onto the whole biopic then?
Well, I mean, that's been going on for years.
Yeah. I know, but Samuel Jackson, he slammed it, so you know.
Samuel L. Jackson isn't the be-all and end-all, but you know.
Okay, if you say so.
I mean, he may disagree. But you know, but it's, you know, going back to like George C. Scott and Patton and probably way before that, that's been the path to Oscar glory. Anyway, ask Nicole Kidman about it. Anyway, we also did want to do like a
quick fun one.
Yeah, because there are like several categories, and I hate kind of like breaking it down to like the six most, you know, kind of telegenic ones, the ones they kind of save for last. On the TV show, you know, there are a lot of great artists out there, a lot of great people who are nominated and have to sit in the nosebleeds because they have to put all the stars up front. So we wanted to do a wild card category, so something we're looking forward to present it, and someone we hoped we'd win. Peter, what did you choose?
I chose Best Original Screenplay, and I chose The Big Sick. I think it definitely deserves that. I'm a little upset that it didn't get nominated for more.
Mm-hmm.
Like Get Out is a comedy, The Big Sick's a comedy, so I don't see why it wasn't nominated for Best Picture. Honestly, I thought it was great, and it dealt with serious issues like a lot of the other ones. But when it comes to the screenplay, they'd been working on it for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to get it picked up by Judd Apatow, people like that. They weren't able to, but they continued working on it and just kept making it more and more perfect. And I think that it is very evident in The Big Sick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's the only nomination for it. And I think it better get, you know, it better get it. It deserves at least one.
Yeah.
I didn't get any Golden Globes or anything. I don't think I won a BAFTA or any of that kind of jazz. So.
No, you're right. It hasn't gotten much love, and that's a shame, because it's a very unique story, a very unique love story, written by the couple who lived it.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, Kamil Nanjiani, being of Pakistani ancestry, you know, is a unique voice in Hollywood and in comedy, and yeah, I would love to see that too. For my wild card, I went with the cinematography category, and part of me would like to see Rachel Morrison win for Mudbound, because she's great. She was the DOP of Black Panther too, so if you saw Black Panther, you might not have seen Mudbound, but you've maybe likely seen Black Panther, and she shot that. She is the first female nominee for cinematography. Really? So it would be nice to see a female winner for cinematography, but sadly she's up against Roger Deakins for Blade Runner 2049. And Roger Deakins needs to win an Oscar, because he's kind of being Susan Lucci'd at this point. With, you know, he should have won for Skyfall, because the cinematography for Skyfall is amazing, but I will settle for Blade Runner 2049, because of the way he was able to balance the look of the original with doing something modern, something different, and he's a great collaborator with Denis Villeneuve as well. So they did Sicario together, which was also something that didn't win an Oscar. Speaking of things that don't win, but he's very, very accomplished. And he knocks it out of the park every time. And it's, you know, he's kind of gone up the last several years against Emmanuel Lubezki, who is, I guess, just a little bit better. but
he doesn't have a nomination this year?
I don't think so, no. So it's Deakins' time.
Yeah.
Having said that, if Rachel Morrison wins, I won't be mad either. But if neither one of them win, I'll be mad.
You'll be mad. Furious?
I don't know. Furious seems a bit much. Anyway, those are our Oscar predictions. And if you are doing like an office pool or something, we bear no responsibility if you win or lose. Well, if you lose anyway. If we win, we might come for 10%. But, yeah. Anyway. We're going to leave it there, and then we're going to take a break, and then come back with our review of Annihilation. Before that, though, we're going to play a bit of music. And this is an artist who's going to be in Guelph on March the 22nd at Royal City Church. It is The Weather Station, and this is from her latest album, You and I on the Other Side of the World. Very apropos. I chose it purposefully. Anyway, you're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Everyone I could. The other partners knew just as little as me. Pakistan again?
I don't know where it was or what it was.
How is that possible? You must be able to tell me something. You vanished off the face of the earth for 12 months. I deserve a better explanation than no explanation.
Does it matter? I don't feel very well.
And it just gets worse from there. Anyway, That was a clip from Annihilation. It's a new film by Alex Garland. It stars Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Tessa Thompson, Gina Rodriguez, Tuva Nourmi, and Oscar Isaac. If you don't know Alex Garland, he's written a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But this is his second film. His first film as a director was Ex Machina, which also starred Oscar Isaac. And
Domhnall Gleeson
and Alicia Vikander. That was kind of her big break. How would you rate Alex Garland as a filmmaker so far, Peter?
Well, I've only seen Ex Machina in this one, but I'd say he's like near perfect. I loved Ex Machina, and we're about to view Annihilation, but I'll say it definitely didn't ruin my opinion on him at all. Yeah, I love him.
Yeah, no, he's been very, very good so far. I don't mean to laugh at Alex Garland. I'm trying to organize my thoughts here, as I sometimes do with these things. But yeah, it's one of the things I think was in the back of my mind in this is I wish Arrival wasn't kind of so fresh in my mind, because a lot of the first part of this film was very Arrival-y, if I can make that an expression. It's not intentional by any stretch. They're two very remarkably different films, but you know, and maybe this is because there's like a dearth of serious science fiction movies now. You know, maybe if you go back and watch like Soylent Green and you know, something other movies like that back to back, they kind of feel like they have a vibe. But that was just something. The movie kind of gets over quickly because it's kind of two very different circumstances, and the movies go in different directions.
Yeah. The like initial buildup was, yeah, it was similar to the film that you mentioned, and just a lot of different sci-fis. I wouldn't compare it to
no.
What was the name of the film that you mentioned?
Arrival.
Arrival. Yeah, I was. I wasn't a huge fan, but I can see why a lot of people loved it. I wouldn't say that Annihilation's beginning was anything like that, but the beginning first little part was stereotypical sci-fi in certain aspects.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that goes to there was an article I was reading that you don't get a lot of like kind of hard sci-fi like this, where it's like taking seriously the themes and ideas, and it's not so much about aliens and robots, and you know, the visuals are great, but I mean, that's not the emphasis. The visuals come from the story rather than vice versa, something like, you know, Star Wars, let's say. But
which is even harder to do.
True. Another interesting thing I found out about this is like there's a bit of behind-the-scenes controversy about this.
I didn't hear about it.
Yeah, that the financier, which is Skydance, who also financed a lot of the big Paramount movies. This comes out of Paramount Pictures. But so they've co-financed like the Star Trek movies and the Mission Impossible movies and things. But David Ellison, who's the head of Skydance, did not apparently like this and wanted to make changes to make it more palatable to the masses, let's say. And I'm not sure if it's a consequence of that, but Annihilation is being released on Netflix, like in almost the rest of the world, in a couple of weeks versus
the theatrical. Yeah, that's what I noticed. Yeah,
which is so bizarre.
So you're saying that like it's possible that he was able to make the director change some things about Annihilation?
No, I don't think that he got the director to change some things. But
maybe
the
Netflix was just an agreement, like, I'll put this on Netflix as long as I don't have to change my
I don't think he masterpiece. I don't think he had the confidence. Ellison had confidence in the product, which is a shame because I think this is a very cinematic film.
Yeah.
And should be seen on the big screen.
I think it will be, or at least I think it'll get, you know, a lot of noms and things like that. Like Ex Machina, I think it'll be remembered. Ex Machina, it'll be on the popular on Netflix part for a while.
Well, true enough. Okay, the story is there's this Area X, which is a great name. It's in the beginning. And it's the beginning is interesting because there's like this twangy guitar, this like kind of bluegrassy guitar on the soundtrack, which
I didn't know how I felt about
that. I don't know how to feel about it either because it's not a sci-fi sound. It's like you're watching like a Diablo Cody movie.
Yeah. Or like Three Billboards. It reminded me of some of this, like music in Three Billboards.
Yeah, it was a very kind of we're making an indie movie soundtrack. And I wasn't sure how to feel about it, but it was different, which I appreciated.
Yeah.
But so there's a comet or asteroid that hits a lighthouse here on Earth. And over the course of a few years, it starts terraforming the immediate environment. And the only way to get There is past this thing called the shimmer, which is kind of like this glowy kind of wall of light thing. And so they have sent several expeditions, and Natalie Portman's is the latest, because as you heard in that clip there, her husband was on the last expedition and came back wrong. So she is on the expedition. Great idea for the most of the movie is five women out in the middle of nowhere, exploring all the zaniness in this alien zone on planet Earth. Which, I mean, this was also based on a novel as well, so it wasn't like Alex Garland's idea. It comes from a novel,
a novel I'd never heard about, but after it's come out, so many of my friends and just people I know are talking about it and how great it is. So I might read on it. So.
It's a trilogy too.
It's a trilogy. Do you know if like this whole film is like what's within the trilogy or just within the first book?
I think it's like the first book. From what I understand, Garland got like a rush copy, which is like the copy they before they take it to press and it gets all the cover design and all that. They will send out these kind of copies with just kind of like a blah cover. It just looks like one of these syllabi books you get over at the bookstore. But they send it out to publishers, and they send it out to like movie studios and production houses to see if there's like any interest in reviewing it or talking about it or optioning it, and that's how Alex Garland got it. So at that point there was no idea that there was going to be a trilogy. It was all of this is based on the one book. And Alex Garland, I read an interview with him where he said like before he actually sat down to write the script, he didn't reread the book again. He reread the book so he knew what was in the book when he optioned it, but he didn't reread the book when he was writing the script. So it's kind of
I'm okay with that. Very loose. Yeah, well, it sticks with like Ex Machina, like his style. Yeah. I don't think he'd be like that if he just fully went with the book. It's also impossible to do that, to make a movie good that like literally has everything that was in the book. Like if they did that with Harry Potter, each one would be like, you know, 5 hours long, and it just would not be enjoyable.
I don't know if I ever told this story on the show, but I once had a conversation with a Harry Potter fan who hated the movies.
Really?
And no word of a lie, one of his problems with the Harry Potter movies, and I'm not joking, is that Hagrid's cabin is in the wrong place. Hagrid's cabin is in the wrong place. And he thinks they should have just taken the books and that was the movie script. And I'm like, well, that kind of doesn't work.
Yeah. And how is that your main issue with the film?
Like, I don't think it was so his main issue, but that was the thing that stuck out in my mind, that he was not satisfied that Hagrid's cabin was in the wrong place. But I mean, that's the mindset of the fan community. But it's interesting to talk about this because one of the complaints or one of the concerns people had is that, apparently in one of the other two books, it is revealed the ethnicity of the characters. Natalie Portman's character is Asian in the books, and one of the other characters is like half indigenous.
Okay.
But I mean, Alex Garland didn't know that.
Well,
this wasn't like a whitewash, although he did get accused of whitewashing, but you know, apparently this is revealed in book two what the ethnicity of the women are. But
in the first one, not at all, which I respect. I respect that.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I think we get a little hung up sometimes on establishing the universe in the future chapters, and I think books are as susceptible to that as movies are. But what do you think of Natalie Portman in this?
Natalie Portman's usually great.
Yeah.
I thought she was great in this.
Yeah.
Her character wasn't my favorite. her relationship with Oscar Isaac was a bit strange, and.
Well, I think that was on purpose.
Yeah. I know it was on purpose, and it was done well. It was great. But her character wasn't like a lovable character, and she was the central character, so I couldn't really like love her. But who I really liked was Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Yeah.
I really liked Jennifer Jason Leigh, the commander, the psychologist is what she was.
Dr. Ventress.
Yeah, yeah. And she
Which is a great name.
She made me really like totally okay with Natalie Portman's character.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought Natalie Portman portrayed her character great. I think if I read the books, I wouldn't like the character either. But she's needed, and Natalie Portman portrayed what I'm assuming the character's like in the book perfectly.
Yeah, there's kind of no razzle dazzle to the character. Like, there's nothing in there to say, like, that I am the lead, and these are my supporting players, and it's, you know, it's very toned down, and she's very stoic in it, and there's a part of that character's background is that she was in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And
I did like her quick flashbacks that you get in the film. I found yeah. those quite interesting.
I'll talk about that in a sec. But I was worried about finding it believable that Natalie Portman was in the army because she's small and skinny. But there's a scene where they find, no word of a lie, a crocodile shark. And she has to take that sucker down.
Yeah, and she
and
does.
You believe this woman had an eagle eye and she's seen some stuff in a war zone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The structure of the thing, I had troubles with that. I didn't like the in media res, where it starts off by showing you the end of the film.
Oh, you don't like that sort of thing?
I sometimes like it, but in this case it felt, because it lays out like in the first 5 minutes the next position, what you're going to see in the next 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Which I, and then you also have the multiple sort of timelines in this, because you have her flashbacks to when her husband went off on his mission. And
very quick, subtle flashbacks, which right. I respected.
And yeah, and then certain things she was doing while he was away, and then we flash back to after the mission, or we flash forward to after the mission, and then there's stuff that happened on the mission, and then they find, like, video cassettes of, well, not cassettes, but video cards of stuff from the previous mission. So it's, you know, the timelines kind of jump around, and I just wish he'd just, like, kind of done this straight up.
You wish it was more linear?
A bit more linear. Mm-hmm. Like, I like the flashbacks because they add a little more flavor to their relationship mm-hmm. and how complicated it kind of was. But it's constantly jumping back to the future where she's being, like, questioned about everything that happened in The Shimmer. I did not like, because it kind of felt like... I don't know. I wonder if that maybe came from the editing process and some, like studio notes about, mm-hmm. you know... People are dumb, so we kind of got to explain what's going on. But I didn't like it. I
did. Other than the one quick flashback, I thought it was cool. I thought it was a good way to kind of show what she was like in the past, and what she was like in the past affects, like, you know, the present of the storyline that we're viewing.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked how quick they were. Yeah,
They give you just enough to sort of get yeah. what's going on in her head, and I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. It's just like the interrogation stuff. I didn't.
Yeah,
with Benedict Wong, I was not
the one flashback I didn't like, because it made me. It's like a spoiler. I don't want to say anything, but it made me think about it for like the whole like main storyline until like the next kind of flashback where more is explained.
Mm.
So that's the one thing. The flashbacks can kind of get things stuck in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wish he'd gone a different direction on that. But you know, the saving grace was that I found all the actresses fairly compelling. Yeah, Jennifer Jason Leigh was really good too.
She's great.
I like Tessa Thompson. Tessa Thompson is someone who, you know, keeps popping up in different places and is playing like dramatically different roles. It's like Creed, Thor Ragnarok. This, you know, she's
Veronica Mars.
Veronica Mars, yeah.
I hate her character, Veronica Mars.
Everybody
but no, she's great.
Hated her character, Veronica. That's why she disappeared.
She's great.
That's why they basically, like, my home planet needs me, her on Veronica Mars.
Yeah, other than Natalie Portman and Jennifer Jason Leigh, she was my favorite of the crew that went in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Genesis Rodriguez, who, like, a lot of people probably know from Jane the Virgin, where she's decidedly not, like, badass in a traditional mm-hmm. sense, but she's very badass here. And the other actress who goes in, her name is Tuva Novotny.
Yeah, Cass Shepard, character name.
Yes, I don't think I'd heard of her before, but she was was really interesting, and she had a really interesting monologue about why she was in The Shimmer, mm-hmm. and it was very underplayed too. And that's one of the things I really liked about this, is that I think in the hands of a different filmmaker, because all the women, it's implied, have like some damage that makes them want to go on what is basically characterized as a suicide mission, because mm-hmm. nobody has come out of The Shimmer with the exception of Oscar Isaac. So they know that, you know, you're likely going in and never returning. And it's kind of explained briefly why, but they don't marinate on the fact that these are damaged women. That mm-hmm. I feel like in the hands of a different filmmaker, that would have been a thing.
It would have been more of a main focus.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got, you know, a couple bits of information about their past that did, yes. You know.
I mean, yeah, to give them kind of a bit of shade, to color them a bit.
Mm-hmm. It was Cass Shepard's character, though. I don't think we learned much about her past at all. Mm-hmm. But she's the one who gave us the information about the other female's past.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, but she was really good, and I liked the kind of friendship she was developing with the Natalie Portman character too, and then it all goes wrong, as it inevitably does. I also liked that in science fictiony things, you kind of sometimes get into technobabble realms that, you know, kind of swallow you alive if you're not science inclined like I am. Mm-hmm. But no, I'm not science inclined, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not that I am science inclined. I'm definitely not science inclined. I like science, but there's a reason I'm not a scientist right now. Some synapses don't fire, is what I'm saying. Anyway, back to the film. I like how they explained it in a simple way.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on in the Shimmer? It's something easy for dummies like me to get. Mm. But it's also very intriguing too. The production design and the way it was shot when they're in the Shimmer, it's subtle, but it's very noticeable.
Oh, it's so noticeable. Yeah. It's remarkable. It's some of the best, most beautiful images I've seen, like, in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Comparable to, like, a ton of, I guess, Terrence Malick films.
Oh, yeah.
Just so beautiful. It's the kind of film where, me personally, once they get into, you know, that environment, I'd be able to mute it, just listen to some music and watch it. It's just so, it's beautiful. It is. Yeah. It's a sci-fi. It has scary elements, but it's a beautiful world they're within.
And they hold off on the scary elements, too.
They do. They do.
It's
a film anyone can see. Like, I don't, it's not, yeah, like, it's got scary elements, but it's not, even someone who doesn't like horror films is going to be able to deal with it.
Right. It's very 2001 in that regard. I won't get into the conclusion, but the conclusion very much reminded me of 2001, when she goes into the hole and things start transforming, mm-hmm, and she, mm-hmm, sees, like, that, let's call it the bubble, where that's kaleidoscoping. Yeah. And it made me think, like, you know what? That's totally something that Kubrick would have done. If it was 2001, if he had CGI for 2001, it wouldn't just be like this little black block. Yeah. Like,
Christopher Nolan was probably jealous he didn't think of a couple of these things for Interstellar, too. But that's what I mean. Like, it was comparable to Interstellar and Space Odyssey and just beautiful films.
Yeah. And it's,
sci-fi films.
Right. It's subtle, too. And you kind of notice it very, not immediately, but how vibrant the colors, mm-hmm, are, and how the light is, like, slightly different, how it's, like, slightly pinkish and purplish in places. And he doesn't go overboard either, because it's implied that the Shimmer or whatever's behind the Shimmer is transforming the area. Mm-hmm. But like we said, it's not scary at first. I mean, it's perhaps unsettling, because when, mm-hmm, they first arrive in the Shimmer, they're like, holy, like, how did we make camp? How did we get here? We've been here for, we've eaten enough food for 4 days. This doesn't make any sense. So it's a bit unsettling in that regard, but
eerie.
Yeah. And, but, you know, it's also kind of about pure exploration for the first part of the time they're in the Shimmer, until, mm-hmm, they start encountering some of the things. But it's not, they don't go overboard with, like, the creatures and how the landscape has changed. It's very, very restrained.
Yeah, it's just all in the background. It's just a part of the world they're within. But it's not like, say, Avatar, where, like, the visuals of the new environment are the main focus.
Right.
They're just there, and they're gorgeous, but they're not the central focus of the plot.
Right. I think people hear the word world building, and they think, like, from scratch. That you can't just take, like, things and turn them into slightly different things. And there's one scene where they discover human-shaped plants, or plants that are mimicking, like, a human shape. And the effect is you know, you could probably write papers about the effect of this, like, and what it says, because, you know, it could be seen as very haunting.
Yeah, and they gave up a quick, like, a biological summary of, like, how that sort of thing happened, too.
Yeah, well, that's a great thing, too. It's they start off the film with, like, Natalie Portman's character, who's, like, a professor, like, explaining about, like, cell biology and how cells replicate and that kind of thing. So when you come later on and you see kind of how the science is presented, you feel like you get it. Mm-hmm. Again, science dummy. But, yeah, it's really great. I'm not sure. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing this again. I'm
going to rewatch it for sure.
Yeah, because I found myself very enthralled by it. I'm not 100% sure about, like, the plotting and a couple other things, that soundtrack, but I would love to see it again to sort of kind of wrap my head around it a bit more.
When it comes to the soundtrack, what we were talking about earlier, I don't know how I feel about that as well, but near the end, like around the climax, when she gets to that hole that you were talking about. There's the one score sound for the climax that I think is, like, fits perfectly with it.
Yeah, that scene, the end scene, yes. The sound design is amazing.
Yeah, everything about that is part, yeah.
Because it's interesting, trying not to spoil too much about it, but it is kind of set up as, like, a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it's kind of shot and the way it's kind of edited, it doesn't make it seem like a conflict, but the immediate reaction is conflict.
Mm-hmm.
And the way Portman, I guess because her character's background as a soldier too, is this is a conflict, and that's kind of not the point. And the movie, plot wise is trying, like, in the script, it's like saying the point of this right now isn't a conflict, but we know this is kind of how you're going to react to it. Mm-hmm. and this is kind of how she's reacting to it too. And that's another reason I wouldn't mind seeing this again, like, to break down that scene a bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, to rewatch, you can probably answer more questions or actually maybe give yourself more questions. The more I watch it, I'll probably eventually read the book.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if it leaves me with a lot of questions, but, I would like to further explore the questions I do have, or to see if I understand the questions the right way. I do wonder, it does fascinate me, the fact that the books have sequels. I'm not sure this will get a sequel.
No, it's not.
And it doesn't really leave it open for a sequel. I feel like it's a complete story. But, I mean, this is another, I think, interesting case of what we were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, how you adapt something.
Mm-hmm. Depends how successful it is. And
yeah.
I don't know if he's the kind of director that would do that.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, he did write 28 Weeks Later.
Did he? Okay.
I think he came back for 28 Weeks Later.
Okay.
But because he wrote 28 Days Later, if you're if you are one of the non-movie buffs who listen to this show, and I know you're out there. But yeah, so he does return to ideas, certainly Alex Garland. But yeah, I think this is a really great, I think between, there's a new Duncan Jones movie too. I think it's on Netflix now, Mute. So, I mean, these are both, like, tremendously, I think, gifted voices in the realm of science fiction filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And I think if you like sort of more adult-oriented sci-fi with big ideas and things, this is the movie for you, and you should definitely make an effort to check it out, even though it will surely be on Netflix sometime in the near future. But this is worth checking out on the big screen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's got the visuals that you better watch it on a big screen. It's not available in 3D, is it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. We didn't see it in 3D.
No,
But even without the 3D, the visuals are still, in my opinion, even more impressive than a ton of the three current 3D films. A lot of the Disney films, you know, they're people brag about how visually beautiful they are, but no, 3D's, not in comparison to Annihilation, in my opinion.
Right. I mean, 3D is like, this is a whole other discussion, but 3D seems like so, it's kind of become the default, and I'm not sure anyone's going out of their way to, like, actually do anything cool with 3D anymore. It's just become a thing you do when you have a big screen movie. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's nobody, aside from maybe James Cameron, there's nobody that really cares about doing innovative things with 3D anymore.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's sad. Anyway, we're going to wrap up the show. and we're going to take next week off. So we're going to have a rare rerun next week. So just be advised about that. And then we'll be back the next week with another review. You can stay connected to us at our website, endcreditsradioshow.com, or you can follow us on social media, End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter. Peter, where can people find
As more per of you? Usual, Mr. Towerak on Twitter or YouTube.
Great. And you can find me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson. I'm on Instagram there too. And you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca for my local political news and stuff like that. And then I'll be on the radio later today at 5 p.m. for Open Credits. And that's with Open Credits. Did I say Open Credits? Oh, it's been one of those days. I will be on CFRU later today for Open Sources Guelph. And that is with Scotty Hertz. And we do that show every Thursday, and I'm very deeply confused right now. Anyway, probably because we're not in our usual studio right now.
It feels different.
I'm going to blame the studio. Good call. Anyway, we'll be back next week for a rerun, and then we'll be back the week after that with another new episode of End Credits. And we will see you then. Thank you.